Good morning. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is The Hot Start on EAA Radio. And joining us, I hope, by phone is Mr. Sean Dorsch of the Carolina Aviation Museum. Are you there, Sean? Nope, he's not there yet. We're working on it.
Uh-oh.
We're having some time. Hey.
Sean, are you there?
I am, yes.
Are you patched through?
I can hear him.
I think so, yes.
Oh, we hear him now.
Can you hear us? Okay, Sean, are you there?
Hello?
Push.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, technical difficulty.
There's a gremlin running around on the control.
No, it's not bad. Okay, are you there, Sean?
I am.
Oh, there we got you. We'll make it work one way or the other. How are you this morning, sir?
You're a little bit hard to hear.
Okay, I don't know if we can get our sound levels to come up.
We have our technical gurus in there right now.
They're working like mad trying to get on it. Okay, I think we may have to try this again later, Sean. Hold on. Okay, anyway. Can you hear us at all?
I can hear you, yes.
Okay.
You just sound distant, far away.
Well, I can hear you. You know, Wisconsin to North Carolina is a pretty good shot. So
Go ahead.
You're in Charlotte, North Carolina, correct?
That's right. Yes.
And you're part of the North Carolina Aviation Museum. I'll get it right eventually.
That's right. The Carolinas Aviation Museum in Charlotte, North Carolina.
How long? You guys opened in 1991.
That's right.
And you recently purchased the aircraft that was known as Flight 1549. And landed. Oh, they're doing technical things out there.
You're just a lot of static.
Yeah, they're trying to figure out what's with the phone patch right now.
We have one of our best gurus in here working on it.
Okay.
Now you just got a lot better right there.
Yep. There were some buttons that needed to be pushed.
There we go.
How's that?
That's a world of a difference.
Oh my goodness, it's amazing. Yes, Jim Gray saves the day.
Jim Gray to the rescue. Thank you, Jim.
Oh, he's patting himself on the back. Anyway, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Now, you guys recently took possession of the aircraft that was Flight 1549, the Miracle on the Hudson plane. That's kind of an unusual museum exhibit, don't you think?
Oh, I tell you, it is absolutely amazing. It's unusual, but highly appropriate. And it is being very well received, far beyond even our expectations. It's a real game changer for us, and it's something that's really unique in the museum world for a couple reasons. First of all, it's the newest airliner in a museum anywhere in the world by about 35 years. So it gives us a real technological lead over any of our peers in the field of commercial aviation. It's basically a new airplane. And most of your other airliners, the 74s and the Concords and things like that that are in museums, those are products of the jet age, the jet set, if you will, from the 1960s and 70s. This airplane is a product of the space age. It's built in many ways like a space shuttle. It's got a tremendous amount of carbon fiber, glass cockpit, all types of very modern systems on it. And because it was in an accident, it's opened up in certain ways that lets the viewers see these modern space-age construction techniques and how they hold up in an accident. And, of course, one of the really amazing things is that the airplane is in just absolutely amazing condition. The inside of the airplane looks like absolutely nothing happened at all, and the vast majority of damage to the outside of the airplane actually occurred when they took it out of the water and took it apart, primarily because nobody thought about saving it at the time.
Yeah, they just sort of chopped it apart, I guess.
They chopped the wings off. They unbolted the tail, fortunately.
Okay. Are you planning on attempting to reassemble it or just kind of stage all the pieces where they should fit?
What we're doing is we are reassembling the aircraft, and it's being conserved as opposed to restored. So it's going to look like it did after the accident, after the investigation, but before they took it all apart.
Gotcha.
So the dents from the tugboat, the dents from the birds, those will all remain. But any damage that happened, taking the wings off or in the storage yard, that type of stuff will be repaired.
That's going to take a lot of crazy glue.
Yeah, well, it is. unfortunately, being located at Charlotte Douglas, which is the seventh busiest airport in the United States, it's also the home of U.S. Airways, and there's approximately 900 A&P mechanics based here at Charlotte Douglas, plus several Airbus employees supporting U.S. Airways Airbus operations. And so we've got an absolute army of ready volunteers that, you know, pride in the company and the product they work on every day and stuff really kind of is motivating everybody to pitch in. So it's really a fantastic project with a virtually unlimited supply of volunteer labor.
Yeah, it sounds like you haven't had to work too hard to get the volunteers to come out.
No, in fact, we're actually fighting to keep them away.
It's fantastic.
It's really been an absolute amazing experience. And, you know, for us, at the beginning of the project, we started working on this just under 2 years ago, about 18 months ago. And that began originally with a contact with U.S. Airways, Doug Parker, the CEO. And that occurred in January of 2009, about 1 year after the original landing in the Hudson. And that was motivated by my visit to Japan, where I visited an exhibit by Japan Airlines on the JAL-123 crash. That's the 747 where they lost about 540 people approximately 25 years ago. And Japan Airlines put together a safety exhibit at Tokyo International Airport where they reassembled part of the tail. But the thing that really got me thinking about 1549 was that the second half of that exhibit was a gigantic flowchart that covered several walls. And the flowchart detailed all of the accidents that occurred between JAL-123 and U.S. Airways Flight 1549. And it showed how each accident led to changes which led to better and better outcomes. And, for example, the United Sioux City crash. You know, those pilots, one of the pilots had actually studied the JAL-123 crash, and so he was able to use differential thrust and get it on the ground, and, you know, a large number of people walked away. But if this accident had happened 25 years ago with the same technology as in the JAL-123 crash, the seats would have collapsed on everybody. They had only had 1G seats. Our airplane had 9G seats. The luggage bins would have fallen down on top of everybody, and people would have been trying to climb out from underneath luggage bins. In our case, the luggage bins held up, the seats held up, and the passengers were able to evacuate Flight 1549 in 90 seconds. So that's just two of many, many changes that have occurred in aviation. And part of the exhibit that we're going to do is going to focus on the fact that aviation is a system. It's a system which, by design, is constantly changing and constantly incorporating change. And even from U.S. Airways Flight 1549, there's approximately 26 changes, either in crew training or aircraft design, that are now being implemented across the major aviation fleet, aircraft fleets in the United States.
Now, they see that's something that we've not heard about. The flying public has not heard about that.
Yeah, they're keeping that in the dark for us, that's for sure.
Well, no, it's actually in the NTSB report, and it has gotten some airtime. I'll tell you, one of the most interesting changes actually has to do with life vests. Believe it or not, only three people took their life vest when they got out of the airplane in the Hudson River. Most people took their seat cushion, but most people, just from a human factor standpoint, didn't think about taking their life vest. Having said that, the flight attendants actually did explain to everybody that there were life vests under the seat and how to use them.
Yeah, that's part of the standard safety briefing.
Yes and no.
It isn't. Prior to the landing in the Hudson, it only occurred on aircraft which had life vests, and only aircraft which did extended operations over water were required to have life vests. Since the landing in the Hudson, all U.S. Airways aircraft were right away added life vests. And I believe that is now one of the NTSB recommendations, which is propagating out across the major fleets in the United States. But it also has to do with explanations. So in the case of the 1549 crew, they actually did explain how to use the life vests, but for some reason, people just remembered the seat cushion, so they've also modified how flight crew give the safety briefing.
Right, right.
Sean, getting back to the original condition of the airplane, did they include the engine that had been ripped off in the landing?
So the only two things that we do not have right now, We do not have the engines, and we do not have the black boxes. The engines were insured separately from the aircraft, a different group of insurance companies. They are in Cincinnati with CFM, and we expect that we will get the engines by the end of the year. One of the engines was disassembled, and the other engine, they got both, and the other engine is still assembled. So it is our plan to display the airplane with one engine on the wing and the other engine off the wing. So that would work out well for us because we would then just display the disassembled engine as an engine exhibit.
Right.
The black boxes we do not have. U.S. Airways is trying to figure out how to remove the recordings from the black boxes and still give us the black boxes. I guess it's on some type of unerasable tape or something. I'm not exactly sure. We may end up with just two other black boxes. But one of the neat parts about the aircraft exhibit is that the way the tail was ripped open, you can see the racks where the black boxes normally reside. And so that's actually part of our tour, is that we point out to people that those empty racks, that's where the black boxes are. And that's just one of many examples of the type of systems and things that you can see in the airplane because it was in the accident.
Now, is the display open yet, or are you still assembling it?
No, the display is open, and actually the reassembly is a big part of the exhibit. It's a lot like taking an Airbus factory tour in Charlotte, North Carolina. And the Airbus factory tour, so to speak, will be going on at the museum probably through the end of the year until we get the engines back on and things like that. Right now, they're working on the horizontal stabilizer on the tail, and then they'll proceed to the tail after that and then put the control surfaces back on and things like that.
Well, that sounds fabulous, and I'm certainly going to have to make a point to get down there.
Definitely.
And we thank you for joining us, sir.
Sure, no problem.
And sorry about those technical difficulties. Thanks for hanging in there while we iron that out.
No problem. Call anytime.
All right. Carolina Aviation Museum is in where again?
Charlotte, North Carolina, right at Charlotte Douglas International Airport.
Okay, and do you guys have a website?
We do indeed. It's carolinasaviation.org.
Very good. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks, Sean.
Take care. Bye-bye.
This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and you're listening to Hot Start on EAA Radio.